Rudgman. Alex is writing a PhD on Delmore Schwartz in Trinity at the moment. Then we'll be entertained by Maurice Devitt, who is actually a student of mine, which abashes me. But he's a great poet, and he's at present doing the MA in Poetry Studies in Mass Ave. Then our next reader will be Owen Staunton, who's just published a book called Temple of Lilac, but has only got one copy with him. So if you'll have to talk to him if you want to buy a copy of his book. We'll then have Elder Roach, who's known to many of you, I'm sure, as a brilliant musician. Carl Parkinson, whose book A Sacrament of Song is on sale from Affirm Press, price €2. He'll be followed by Anne Tanham, who has also just published a book. I don't think it's quite off the presses yet, but she is taking pre-orders, so do sign Anne's pre-order list. And then Anne will be followed by Mairead Mabe, who has also just published a book. There must be something in the water. Mairead's book was launched last Tuesday. She hasn't got copies for sale, she forgot. Again, talk to Mairead if you want to buy a copy of her book in all good bookshops, I'm sure. And then finally, rounding off the open mic section is Ronan Murphy. So without any further messing around from me, I'd like to invite Alex Rudgman to read. Yes.
Thanks very much, Kit. Just a couple of exercises. This first one I should probably read sort of like an Englishman trying to do an American accent, but I haven't had a chance to practice it, so I'll probably just do it in an English accent. Take me to the airport, cabbie. I can't let her get on that plane. In a minute or two, she'll have dropped off her bags, and I might never see her again. Step on the pedal. You know where you're going? That's good. We've got 10 minutes max. If you dare disappoint me, you'll pay a high price. Man, from this point, there's no turning back. Oh, sure, that light's red, but you've got to go through it. You hear me? Then why did you brake? It's really important you do what I tell you. You've got to show me you've got what it takes. Oh, Christ, you're pathetic. I've told you, get moving. No, don't. Just get out of your seat. From this moment on, matey, I'm the one driving. You're the passenger now. Hold on tight. Oh, come on. Can't this cab move any faster? I'm cruising, but look at the time. It's still ticking on and she's bound to be moving. I hope she's the last in the line. Get out of my way, lorries, Fiats and grannies, or I'll drive you all right off the road. Oh, hell, do you know what? I'd be better off running. Have your keys back, dude. Thanks for the ride. Now, that wasn't good. Jesus, what was I thinking? I'm knackered and covered in sweat. But I've made it. Departures. Shit, she's already boarding. But I'll rescue my little one yet. Let me through security, someone. No, I don't have no baggage at all. And I don't have a passport or boarding card, stupid. Can't you see? I've just come for my girl. There's a bomb! Perfect. Now they're distracted. I'll peg it and barge my way through. The x-ray thing's wailing, duty-free has gone to mayhem, but I'm heading for boarding gate 2. Oh, run into my arms now, baby, and bury your head in my chest. Do emotional things in the way that you ought to, and say how you're sorry you left. What do you mean you're not pleased to see me? There's no way you're changing your mind. I've gone to the effort of coming to get you, showed I'm sorry, don't be so unkind. Now this is a problem. Look, Mr. Policeman, I promise it's not what it seems. I won't put your cuffs on. I'm not a bad person. I'm a hero. I'm living my dreams. And this is also a kind of a little short exercise. Sort of imagine that it would come at the end of a book or something. Helpline. If you have been affected by any of the issues raised in this book of poems, good. That's what I intended. And if you've been affected more by the way I've put them than by the issues themselves, so much the better, well read. The symptoms should be minor. Being unable to sleep because you can't get a line out of your head, that's all right. But taking to the bottle, pretending you're someone else or wanting to kill someone, these could mean there's a problem. If you find yourself living outside your own life, put down this book and remind yourself that every word is made up. If that doesn't work, consult your doctor, but do not blame me. My imagination has nothing to do with it. Don't send hate mail or death threats. Don't try to track me down. You won't find me, and rest assured, there's no number
you can be.
Hi, I'm Kit's student, so it's all down to her. I'm going to read,
I take no responsibility.
Four short poems. The first one is called The Single Twin. They would say you were born with squabbling eyes, and when you stared, even your mother looked away. A swarm of black hair pasted to your head like a damp rose petal. Fingers already finding opposition, knotted in the jailed shadow of your cot. You could knit when you were three, a perfect cable, each dropped stitch silently recovered, as needles longer than your arms coaxed a scarf from noodles of wool. Later, a balaclava to frame your eyes, one blue, one grey. Still life with bullet and tattoo. A man on the bus stared into my eyes today. What do you see? I asked. I see nothing and I see myself. I see my fears stolen by you. I followed him into a large building along a wide corridor. Everyone he passed called him a different name. As he walked, he got smaller until I could just see his shoes. An office door opened, and for a split second, I saw the painting. Melancholy. Sometimes the wind could whip words from her lips, and he climbed into the tree of his mind. Thought of a girl from school, mouth a little fuller than he remembered, hands thinner. He could create their past from the breadcrumbs of memory, assemble a photo fit in chalk, then roll her skin like beetle leaf until her fingerprint became his, and every shop window was a drizzle of her. He waited for the precinct of darkness, hoped his shadow would fit, and scrawled the streets for a rumour of her. If he was lucky, she would walk by. Maybe a different shape, but the same eyes. The same eyes she had stolen while he slept. And finally, a nice little pastoral one for autumn. My hands graze your throat, red, smooth and brittle. I bite your tongue, it tastes of lies, black as butter. Eyes light out your past, nasty as silk shoes. The geography of bruises, now old and shameless. The cove of your breasts, where once cloud-free I hid, is seamless with deception. Memories tick at your knuckles as you grip and ungrip the last certainty of you, while leaves falling have left you naked. Thank you.
This one is called Tom Hood's Grave. Between the dates of birth and death, a biographical hyphen, from which I tumbled down here, but I'm comfy in my coffin. The headstone also has my name, which means that in this plot rest I who was and will not be, yet am, in the sense of not. The far side of the cemetery, there is a female corpse. The tombstone fraternity woo her with their harps. As I won't get a harp until my ears have dropped away, I'll polish all my peeping bones and swim through tons of clay, and if I go to pieces, then my bits will indicate I am not I, but the remains are me because I'm late. detached enough to flash her these my relics now that she, like everything departed, is a dear to eerie me. I wish that I could hang my shroud upon her tomb to show conundrums of a double rest and dual peace, but oh, my lullaby, the requiem, did not predict a dream of coffin hunting in the hush of ghosts, in case I'd seem to contradict the epitaph, which certifies I'm just a mere postgraduate of flesh, whose thesis will be dust. My grinning requiescat is carved by the overboard time, whose tick goes tickling into top and chuckling into chime. He'll split my sides with running sand, and when I'm wholly grained, the mottles smiled on stone should be his legend on my name. And this one now is not a rhymed poem, it's called Toys. It's about, it's a very surreal poem, it's about a child finding a toy he had thrown away. Once when I was small, I dropped at a smaller boy, as tiny as a toy soldier. He was in a forgotten box, his body carved from chalk, his face as white as altar cloth in the cool and gloomy summer house a troop of children pushed him through. A hymn of praise they sang but didn't smile, a gift of flowers they gave but wouldn't speak or look at him, were careful not to touch him because the cold was coiling around his lips the colour of the flowers. Shunned and dying, he was calling me. I heard a cry of horror as the cradle rocked, and though it tipped and slid him down a swallowing gulch of dust, the loosened nails were slotting, filling the clefts of a steepled hill, and screaming out to me, beseeching me with lidless bleeding eyes, he had clambered up with bleeding feet to lie on a wooded green and bleed on the grit of marble I was mounding to hide the rising shadow of a peeled toy tree bleached and rotting on the banks of a black toy river. And there, making a toy of his name, I called him Jimmy, to cancel the rune traced out on the toy island of stone in the frightening water, because James, a gold medal word, the garland for growing up, was too heavy and cold for a drummer boy wailing, his flesh corroding, his boat going down with its ballast of flowers. I marched him then to his hearse, my bed in a temple of lilac. Both names I tagged on his feet and scratched them again on each wrist, but when joining his hands, made sure the words didn't touch, now his groin was done. I smelled rust on his face, the damp of an old cardboard box on his breath, and lumber room dust from below, though I couldn't see down as the coach we rode in was dark. But the glaze of eyes growing still, and the pattern of toys, small soldiers sewn into his shroud, a battlefield red, began to light up the hearse, now a gun carriage ticking, a mechanized toy with a white ice cream coffin and peaked cap of leaves on the lid. It was pistoned and driven to a cavern under the river by a broken, derelict body and one borrowed pulse. Behind the soldiers dead marching, guardsmen I followed through the gun smoke of night to resurrect and give life to a thrown away toy in the morning.
Really a poet. I wasn't really coming here to do this, but you know, sometimes it's good to step out of your comfort zone. This poem is called Burning Man. A white plaster wall is cracked, hang faces and buttons green on a lichen moss stone. A burning man stands black against an orange blaze, the room is white. I stoop and outspread these hands above the brown smoke-stained keys, the exhibition centre point. Pointing fingers, flickering words, bounce, bumbling murmurs, rumble and fill a soft wet air. The walls are cracked, dry and hard around each word, dropped and drowned and ignored. Feet crowd the floor around where I roar and resound, for upon each pounding pound, reflections of the piano sound fail to help them understand. The silence is broken. It's a chore, and it hurts all the more when I stop, for then the silence bores each pointing tip and fingers fail to tap at least the faintest clap to tell these hands not to stop. Green buttons on a lichen moss stone, cool coloured textures, flecks of paint and copper, four framed seasons and the shadow of a burning man standing black against the blaze against the cracks of a white wall. This is my take on Petit Mort, or Little Death. It's supposed to be very sort of the overall outcome is supposed to be very joyous, but this is one situation where the joy just doesn't come along at all. It should have been a joy to be with you. You were so coy when that blue summer dress fell to the floor. You were so beautiful. The little naked frenzy to wrap yourself beneath my arms, concealed and secure beneath these arms. I could have stared at you for a thousand days on end. We breathed in breath and tasted sweat, and upon each careful crest and fall we scratched and kissed. Our goosebump skin, alert and tense, missed nothing at all. We suckled upon our bottom lip and fused and bound at the hip we dug in deep. And with a final bestial grunt, we slipped into a heap. I lay staring at the lava flow of night lights across the wall, slowly creeping. Upon each heaving breath, I could feel it seeping in, pushing through the silence, crushing the nothingness, that post-passion malady, that dreaded little death. It should have been a joy to be with you. Yeah, it should have been a joy. Thanks.
The two guys that got shot was in the news the last few days, seeing that two of us. Well, they were from the area where I grew up and kind of know them a bit, you know. I knew one of them when I saw it in the news. I already had this ring, but it kind of relates to that. It's always the same people get shot from the same places, you know. But from the gangsters and stuff, it's just called How It Is Down Here in the streets. Down city streets where the people are beaten down, beaten up, beaten sideways and backwards, beaten on the outside and on the inside. And you can see it in their faces, see it in the skag heads, bloodshot eyes, runny noses, syringes, broken bottles and HIV infected children that fill the canvases of these places, you know, ghetto slums, flat complexes, socially challenged areas. We're socially challenged. We're all collecting social welfare. We're soul fully challenged. See, we grew up and asked, shit man, does anyone care that my mother can't get out of bed? Because she was on the sauce last night and this morning she got a head on her. She got a ton of weight on her. So I ain't going to school today. And what school got for me anyway? 2 + 2 = 4. History. Who won the last World War when there's a war out on the street? So that's how it is down here. In the streets. Down city streets. And my neighbour just beat his wife. Left her with a fat lip and 2 black eyes. And you can hear the kids cry like some grotesque lullaby. Is it any wonder that everyone just wants to get high on weed, coke, heroin, alcohol, ecstasy, speed and crack, and that's how it is down here, down city streets, down in the gutter, but I'm looking at the stars. When I was a kid, I used to think, maybe I don't come from here. Maybe I come from somewhere in outer space, like Jupiter or Mars. What about all the young men down here, locked up behind bars for selling drugs, for robbing cars, for assault, for murder? Is it all their fault? Was it a lack of hugs that turned them into toes? And now Mammy holds 2 pictures, one of Communion Day and one of a mug shot, and wonders what happened to her son and what happened to the younger one who just came in drunk, stumbling, his face covered in blood. But that's how it is down here, down city streets. And bang, another gangster got shot. And bang, another girl just took a forced skin pop. In a few months she'll be hooked and injecting in her feet. And bang, another drunken mistake is running amok out on the street. And bang, another boy thinks he's a man because he beat the crap out of somebody. And bang, another drug dealer buys a flash car and drives around the flats thinking he's John Gotti. And bang, another young man goes to jail to join the other three brothers in his family. And bang, another OD. Some more casualties of the war on drugs. Ah, I see, I see. Now here's a little story. Born in inner city Dublin, raised in a two-bed flat, five-storey high. Mark got drunk nearly every night. At the age of 8, he watched his dad die. Cigarette in one hand, can in the other. Doctor said it was a heart attack. When he come home from school, he'd walk past the junkies on the stairs, banging up smack and the smell of piss and sometimes shit. Animal or human, blood on the walls, dirty walks on the ground, graffiti in the halls, nicknames, kid games, kick the can, red rover heads and bodies. See, this was before PS3 and Xbox for saves and snares, and girls had a doll on the pram, and boys had a ball on the horny stick, and when the girls would rob the ball for a chase, and sometimes the chase would end in a kiss, and this is how it went when he was a child, and it was wild, 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 because at night the stone and cars would come and spin, 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 do handbrake turns, crashing the poles, parties and train in the morning, the old boys would sing real loud and now a chillin', and the women would complain about their lawyers, husbands and kids, and joints were born, and smoke went in his eyes, and the noise, the noise, the noise of married couples, fights, crying babies, dogs barking, sirens and screams, bangs and rockets, radios and TVs blaring, and it was wild, wild, wild. And in school he learned how to read and write and how to fight and how everything he did was wrong. Wrong answers to questions, wrong time to come in at, wrong way to stand in line, wrong words to say, wrong dreams to have, wrong face in the mirror. And he was fed up eating dinner from the chipper every night. Bath or burgers, quarter pounds and chips, 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 salt, milk, stinking brown paper bags, grease on his lips. So he learned to cook because his mama, she didn't give a fuck except about fags and beer. And he didn't have no money to get them new Nikes. So he went and robbed somebody's car stereo to buy them new Nikes and be just like everybody else and jump around like Michael Jordan. But he wasn't even into basketball, he liked football and he was good at it. But his brother said, "Don't be messing around. Shite. Come on here, smoke some of this, get you high as a kite." And they would sing, "Everything's gonna be alright." But everything wasn't alright. Then his bro and him went into business selling the gear, and in no time they ruled the flats with intimidation and fear. See the money, the cars, the motorbikes, the champagne, cocaine, women, 9 bars, the small town fame all went to their heads. Well, his brother died getting high on his own supply one night. And him, but he had an accident in prison. Fell down the spiral stairs in Mountjoy. Or maybe he was pushed. But the guards didn't give a fuck for the likes of him. So no need to investigate. Case closed, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Guns, guns, guns. Another gangster gone down the hail of bullets. Says a man in a suit on RTE1. You can read it every other day in the Star, the Mirror, or the Sun. Bada bada boom. Boom. See, it's all the cocaine, man. It fucks with the brain, and everybody wants to be Tony Montana. Because first you get the money, then you get the power, then you get the women. But here, did you see the fucking end of the film? When he gets riddled and riddled, and he was the best. They got to him. What makes you think they won't get to you? And all the mothers losing sons, the bullets and guns. Let me hear you say, "We don't want this shit no more. We don't want this shit no more. No more dead before they reach 21. No more fatherless daughters and sons. No more bullets in the brain. No more blood spilt from the cocaine gravy train. No more hymns singing and flowers laid down in the rain. No more executions and cold blood just to be public enemy number one. No more jobs. No more prospects, no more dreams, only guns, guns, drugs, drugs, guns, guns, guns." That's how it is down here. In the streets. Down city streets. But it doesn't have to be. And I've got the recipe. And it goes, ambition, respect for yourself and others, dedication, determination, confidence, joy, laughter, love. Have belief, be unique, be strong enough to have hope. Now that power comes from within, not from money or drugs or guns, guns, fucking guns.
Just a clipboard as a reminder for the book launch. I'm not asking anybody to
to sign away any 1 year end. It's just a book on the 5th of February, and you're all very welcome. And I'll just leave it over here if anybody wants to sign up. The title of the book is Take This Life, and hopefully it'll be out before Christmas. It's been published by Sixth House, and I'm just going to do two poems from it. And a lot of the poetry is more like a lyrical conversation rather than poems, so I'm just going to roll one into the other and forget about the titles. You can read them if you want to read the book. I can pinpoint the very moment when adulthood greeted me. I was well into my 20s and had a small child or two in tow. I wore the mantle of mother, but underneath I felt like a child. It was all dress up and let's pretend and hope that no one notices. Down at the local shopping centre one day, with my dollies and buggy. My apologies, I'm a bit nervous. But down the local shopping centre, with my dollies and buggy, I was playing shop and got me money, and I went into the butcher's for some play food, and it happened. There amidst the sawdust and the metallic smell of blood, the butcher Fran said to me, "What can I get you today, Mrs. Tannen?" And I looked over my shoulder to see if my mum was there. I was alone. So I turned back around and looked straight at him. And then I drew myself up and said with quiet authority, "I'll have that piece of round steak there. No, not that piece. The one to the left of it, please." And then I paid him with my hair down cash, zipped the children up against the cold, and went back to my bricks and mortar house where the rest of my life was waiting for me. It was just 15 months between us, and every early memory holds his imprint. The smell of his skin I took as my own. A snapshot. We are 4 and 5 in a long back garden that holds our whole universe. We crouch, bony knees touching, and build our very first spider house. There was just an inch between us, but that gave him the edge and the right to be first at everything. A memory. Mum brings me up to his classroom and I root around his desk for a souvenir to bring home from this strange land. The tide has brought him far from home and I'm waiting for a wave to come and pull me in. There was a landing between us and when he was scared, we would whisper across the nighttime divide. A confession, lying in the dark, listening to his voice that lacked its daytime authority. I relished my power and stretched a full inch tall on the bed. I sometimes pretended to be asleep just to hear his plea. There was more than a foot between us, and from that distance his words were muffled and hard to follow. An observation. During adolescence I used his progress as a yardstick for what success meant. The bulk of a 6 foot frame obscured my field of vision. I chose only to see pint-sized rooms. In early adulthood, there was a continent between us and I stretched my unused wings and discovered I could fly. A one-sided conversation. Inside my head, as I swooped and soared, a voice inside my head said, "Good, but not good enough. Bold, not bold enough." It sounded just like his voice and I did not question its credentials. When he returned, our different lives lay between us, and we discovered that a shared beginning does not ensure a lifelong bond. A realization. It's like I'm visiting a familiar country, but all the old places have been pulled down. The map I've brought is obsolete, and I feel heavy with a peculiar sadness. And now, there's only a table between us as we nurse our drinks and keep an eye on the time. A question. I wonder which one of us is on that far distant shore, and if a wave will bring us back to that time when we were the small ones, a self-contained unit in a world of our own. Thank you.
These poems are from my new book, 12 Beds for the Draper, so called because they're mostly, well, actually not most dreams, but they started with dreams. I was studying astrology, it's actually some years ago now, And I was quite impressed with certain aspects of astrology. I've kind of moved away from it now, but I'm still impressed with certain aspects of it. So at the time, I thought I might try an experiment, which was to record my dreams and see whether the passage of the moon through the zodiac in the space of the month would actually, well, bore any relationship with the dreams, or whether I was affected in any way by the passage of the moon. Now, I didn't continue the experiment because it would have to be done scientifically and with controls and over a long period of time to be of any value as a study, but I did start the sequence. So the sequence, I suppose, is a sort of a tribute to what I liked about astrology and how it helped me in various ways. So the collection simply uses, as a thematic structure, the signs of the zodiac. The poems are allocated the appropriate signs, or what I thought were the appropriate signs. Now, the poems may have occurred regardless, but I suppose the genesis was astrological. I'd like to do two poems. One isn't a dream, and the other is. They're both from the collection. First one's from the Pisces section. It's called The Emerald Pool. I am no self-contained woman, no deep-throated, double-breasted repository of power. I'm more a puzzled fish, hunting for food in a sea of uncertain nourishment. The shark is forever close. I swim camouflaged. My mouth pops. My mind spins. You look from the window. Outside is a clamorous flux of words, philosophies, analyses, trends, well-tended nature, cars, computers, confident heels, ascending knees, argument, certain involvement, laughs, love, hope, other people desiring other people's methods. And all you are is the spot where you stand, the spaceship departing in a light cone, infusing the message, "We will return." There seems no choice then but to enter the only portal that remains unshielded. That's how I came to say yes, and accept for a time the silence that warps me. To stand here and watch may be radical too, as hard to be scaled in the still deep emerald pool as it is to be armoured in the field. I know that element as if it were skin. I have floated face up and down, and once I swallowed some that morphed inside. I felt it form into a hand-shaped bone that sits here now in a bay, as if I could bend to a place so internal it's distant. This is my habit. I swim. I'm sleek. Come striding out, shoulders back, hair pressed to my neck, my sculpted body a polished teak. I rest. Until the trees start to whisper at my back, the forest begins to cackle, and the sun does nothing to help. My fingers stiffen, lose their quickness, mass up like the toes that have begun to arch and form sickles of claws. My skin turns harsh, my body convulses and reforms. In the emerald pool, the image I see shows two new eyes bulging in my forehead. My warped spasm has not phased it. She Gihe in the valley and this cursed pool will only sit prettily green, waiting to lap me in. When I open my mouth, I don't know if it's to drink or... this is a poem... this is a dream from the Scorpio section of the book. The books are available from me, my email, online. and there is a performance in Belbrigham next week, and I'll be doing half of the book at least, an hour long performance. However, this is from the Scorpio section, the kind of dream one doesn't like to have because you don't know what it's saying, and you wake up all confused and fearful. It's called Eclipse. Sun hair. Sun cheek, sun lip, on glazed limbs, seen her on streets, hips sway, tease, followed her track, my eyes did, jumped up and bounced after, bounced until she turned the corner. Lenses on her all the time, taking in her sunlit, sun roll to the right and left. She doesn't ask for attention, she gets it, holds it like her jeans hold her, like her jumper hugs her. Bodies like hers don't need designer clothes. Plain blue doesn't faze a star. She's been caught. She's been shot. She's a wrap. Candid video. Ripe for reshowing. Edited. Dickied up. Playing on the retina. Big time. Roll it. She's here. No longer walking. Ours now. We're a gang of indiscriminate sex. We throw her down, I willing too. Shave her sun hair bare to the base glow. Mount her from behind and use her like a doll. Something in her capture is a thriller I don't think beyond the simple plot. The film stops. I have to tell a friend. He mutters kindly. The subconscious does strange things. I try to believe there's no part of me which shave a sun of every ray, disregard a totem, turn movement to a slice of flesh, ride, shod, ever slash a smile into a soiled and broken body like a god. Thank you.
Okay, hello. I'm going to start with a sound poem called From Lingley. Flee, fee, fee, del mong, grow those down with the mouth. Now sinkwa, sapwa, suck so, sleevey, cream meek, ridiculous, whistle, was, was, wandering woes, and win the pin bright principia, wishing full shash. Laugh the betty act in leaf and luster, muster the weaker and gather in foam to dome. Okay, the next poem is a short poem called Corwa Long Sings in the Midnight Mirror. For the man who hired the 11 clones of his godson's younger brother to film the film crew, filming Sam and Sarah, filming each other. For Archie Long the joiner, may he never miss a link. I rock the cradle, cock-a-doodle, hissy hissy, wink. Okay. I'm going to finish off with this poem. It's a recent poem, Saffron Diesel's Dream Song. Okay. The octopusy angel had a yen to tickle and scratch the belly of dark matter, where the draculated batmen from Amazon to Sen dangle upside down and squeak and flutter. Oh, wicky sticky fate for stuck in marmite, while ever the wilder lotus falls cascade. Art might save us, children might, the car might. Miss Piggy find her Kermit, or thaumaturgic basalt in the peppered shade. Manacled, umbilicaled in the wondrous dudgeon, above, below, before, behind, and by. See free the not-dove dove in the puddled pigeon. Unimagine, unimagine, now hear the nowhere, eye to eye to eye. Thank you.
Thank all our open mic readers, Alex Runchman, Maurice Devitt, Owen Staunton, Elder Roach, Carl Parkinson, Anne Tanham, Lorraine Maeve, and Ronan Murphy. I want to introduce someone who probably needs no introduction, so I'm going to do something a little bit unusual. I don't often read my own poems.